Hi, good morning, everybody. Sorry for waiting. This is Javier Marín, Chief IR and ESG Officer at MásMóvil. Welcome, everybody, to the full year 2021 and fourth quarter 2021 conference call, which, as always, is being led by our CEO, Meinrad Spenger. Meini, all yours.
Thank you, Javier. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the probably best attended result call in history of MásMóvil. My job is quite easy because I can report to you the best quarter in terms of revenue growth in the history, and basically, also in the year 2021, both in organic as well as inorganic terms. We have the best or the highest EBITDA and also the highest EBITDA margin in history. If you look in more detail into our results, we see that our growth story continues. We have a revenue growth of 28% or 7% pro forma, meaning including the Euskaltel from 1st of January 2021. We have also a 48% EBITDA growth or 10% pro forma with Euskaltel included. In terms of service lines, we have reached by year-end 3.1 million broadband lines and a total of 14.5 million total lines, which means that we had a growth of 3.5 million lines in total between postpaid and broadband, or an organic growth of around 1.5 million lines, half a million lines in broadband and 1 million line in mobile postpaid. Great results also in commercial terms, despite of tough market conditions. We are leading also the fiber footprint. We have reached 27 million homes in year-end 2021. We are the operator with the highest fiber coverage in Spain. We have reached a reported net debt of 6.7 billion, in line with our plans. In terms of structured leverage, we are at 5.0x, or in terms of senior debt, in 4.1x. If we continue on the next page, we have reached a lot of operational milestones. Most importantly, we have advanced well in the integration of Euskaltel. We have a unified organization. We have migrated already more than 90% of the mobile lines of Euskaltel and Art cable. We are also advancing well in the NetCo transaction. We expect to close it within this quarter. Just highlights around this NetCo transaction, 1.1 million homes should be included. We expect at least 500 million euros of proceeds for MásMóvil, maintaining MásMóvil share of close to 50% of the NetCo, and includes also a CapEx avoidance of around 130 million euros. As said, the details we will announce in the course of this quarter. We have also, very importantly, restructured all our wholesale agreements with all the relevant operators in Spain, and we have included Virgin, the Virgin brand, also in our non-exclusive shops. Other important milestones, we have been able finally to acquire a relevant spectrum portfolio in Portugal. We will announce our details on the strategy in Portugal also within this quarter. Anyway, we will talk about the CapEx light strategy. We have also assumed full ownership on Carbonitel or Nowo, the retail brand, the retail operator in Portugal. We have finalized, as promised, the UCLES FTTH project. We have sold basically to Macquarie around 1 million homes and cashed in around 300 million, which reduced our CapEx in 2021. We have also assumed full ownership of our KUK brand in the north, so in Euskadi or the Basque region. We have launched new services, home security and health insurance at the end of last year. On the next page five, as you know, we are committed with ESG. MásMóvil historically has been the first operator in Europe that had an ESG rating and basically bases part of its financing on this ESG rating. We are not only doing this formally, so rating process, but in practice we are also implementing a lot of initiatives. One of the most important is that we are net zero in carbon, and we have confirmed the net zero also in this year, including Euskaltel, which was a major effort for us. We are also a B Corp company, meaning a company that is certified to have positive impact both in social as well as in environmental terms. We have the ISO certificate for environmental management systems. We have been nominated as best telco to work in Spain, as well as the company with the best talent management. And as mentioned before, we have a ESG core and score, and we have a DLP and interest partially is depending on this ESG score. If we look at our concrete results, page 6, we see that in the year 2021, MásMóvil has a reported revenue growth of 28%. If we look in detail at the pro forma values, meaning basically Euskaltel incorporated from the 1st of January, we still have a 7% revenue growth, which is quite notable in a market that has decreased has negative revenue growth. If you look in detail in the fourth quarter, we see even better values, higher growth rates, both in reported as well in pro forma. So we have a 8% pro forma growth in total and in a 9% in service revenues. In EBITDA on page 8, we see a significant growth in the reported EBITDAs, both in the quarter, higher growth, 52%, as well in the year with 48%. On the next page, we see the pro forma EBITDA evolution. We see that we have a total growth, pro forma growth of 10% last year in 2021, including Euskaltel from January onwards. And we see especially an interesting growth in the fourth quarter to reach over 1.1 billion euros in EBITDA. If you look at the line evolution on page 10, our services, we reach 14.5 million services in broadband and mobile. And if you look at the broadband and mobile postpaid lines, then we see a growth of 3.5 million lines, of which 1.5 million is organic growth. The rest is due to the acquisition of Euskaltel. And we see in the last quarter, in Q4, a net growth of 52,000 broadband lines and 194,000 postpaid lines. In terms of broadband, we see a slight acceleration in Q1 2022. On the page 11, we see the evolution of our client base. We see that basically almost 100% is already fiber and HFC based. In the north, so in Euskaltel, R and Telecable, we have also initiated the swap from HFC to fiber, and we have updated or upgraded around 50,000 clients from cable to FTTH already. On page 12, you see the evolution of a fiber footprint. We are leader in Spain in terms of fiber coverage, and we have reached by year end the 27 million homes, most of them own fiber or with usage rights. If you look at page 13 on the reported CapEx, basically we are in line with our expectations. We have included also Euskaltel here. We have around 500 million of CapEx, but reduced by the UCLES project, we we have a net capex of 424 million euros. And the relevant part of it is growth. We have around 12% of the revenues are the recurrent capex. If you look in detail in our cash flow from operations on page 14, then we see we have an adjusted cash flow from operation of 120 million and an operating cash flow, recurrent operating cash flow of 605. The cash flow from operations didn't grow in the last quarter. It's a similar value than as in September. Why? Because we have included the retrofit project, fiber project of Euskaltel, and we've also some integration capex included. So basically, maybe maintaining the same value as after 9 months. What does that mean in terms of net debt? We had the initial net debt in accounting terms of 3.1 billion, and this has obviously increased with the Euskaltel transaction. We have now a reported net debt of 6.7 billion euros. The major part obviously is due to the Euskaltel transaction, and also by some additional debt and interest payments obviously related to this transaction. On page 16, we see a different view on the debt, the structural debt. So our net leverage on the structural debt is 5 times EBITDA, meaning total structural net debt 6.6 billion with 1.3 billion of structuring EBITDA, which is basically the run rate of the third and the fourth quarter analyzed, plus some synergies that have not been materialized. That in that way we reach the 1.3 billion euros of EBITDA. So 5 times is the total structural net debt, or the leverage on total structural net debt. And if we just limit on senior structural net debt, we are at 4.1 times EBITDA. That's all from my side from the presentation, but we are happy to respond to your questions.
Thank you very much, Manny. Operator, please, let's open the Q&A.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, the Q&A session starts now. If you wish to ask a question, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad. Thank you. The first question comes from Georgios Ciliakonou from Citi. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, guys. Thank you for taking my questions and congratulations for the results. If you don't mind, maybe a couple of questions around the pending agreement you have with Orange. I just wanted to maybe clarify a couple of things to the degree that you guys can comment. The first one is if you could share with us your thoughts around where you think this merger could be reviewed, whether it will be by Digicom or whether it will be locally done in Spain. And then the second question I had is more around your future plans on investment. I can see obviously you have a lot of own fiber with usage rights. I guess there's some overlap also with Orange on that. But if you could perhaps expand a bit as to whether with a new combination there is scope perhaps to expand fiber in some of the more rural areas you wouldn't have done normally. I know some of the subsidies have gone out already, but whether there's something left in between those. And then my final question is around the market conditions. I was wondering if you can comment a bit about what you are seeing in the market. There's a couple of other challenges emerging, whether you think there is perhaps scope for you to maintain your growth, or whether you're worried about the inroads that they're making. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Georgios. Well, in terms of the announced transaction with Orange, I just ask you for comprehension. It's very early in this process to give provide you any details, especially because it's not signed yet. No, we have just announced a pre-agreement, and therefore we cannot discuss right now a lot of details. In terms of where it will be handled, most probably it will be DG Competition in Brussels. I think that's quite clear. And regarding future plans of investment, I cannot give you exact dates, but obviously the combined market share will be higher. That will mean that the combined company would be more efficient, more productive, and has higher capacities to invest in 5G and also in additional fiber footprint. But having said that, this is, let's say, my high-level response. I cannot give you details because the joint business plan is not elaborated yet. But the logic of the deal is quite simple. Higher client base, more efficient use of the own networks, and therefore higher capacity to invest, both in fiber as well as in 5G. In terms of market conditions, we have been in the market now for 14 years, 16 years of existence of MásMóvil, and in the last years, a lot of new players have emerged. And what happened to MásMóvil is we had quite reduced impact. We continued to grow. Also, last quarter, we have had a significant growth track or growth results. And as mentioned before, we see a slight acceleration in growth in the first quarter 2022. In terms of behavior of the remaining players, I think little changed. We see Vodafone still very aggressive. I just received yesterday a nice call to offer me 50% discount during 12 months on my mobile services. But we see also that Telefonica did, I think, 4 tariff announcement and reductions during the last 10 days. So the market is tough, is competitive, but that makes us stronger in MásMóvil because we have to fight a bit more. So overall, we are still confident that we'll be able to continue our growth story.
What happened to the Vodafone offer? Did you take it?
No, but I did competitive espionage and understood very well the offer from our competitors.
Thank you, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question comes from Fernando Cordero from Banco Santander. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning, and thanks for taking my three questions. Just to understand the first point, and also I perfectly understand your comments mainly on the fact that you can give us a little disclosure on the outlook after the Orange deal. But in any sense, or in any case, I would like to understand also what are your views regarding your current brand portfolio. And in that sense, at which extent do you believe that each of the brands that you are currently having and more are going to come are already having a well-defined, market segment, or you are seeing there a material amount of commercial synergies, or at which extent the portfolios are starting to be overlapped between the different brands? Second point is, or my second question is, also looking at your margins in the fourth quarter, you are already probably the best-in-class EBITDA margin in the Spanish telco sector, even considering your business model in that sense. And again, excluding the synergies to come from Euskaltel and also the ones to come with the Orange deal, I just would like to understand which are the levers that you can see in your margin outlook. Could be also positive levers or negative levers, positive in terms of operational leverage, negative in terms of wholesale and so on. And the last question on my side is a quite detailed one, in the sense that once you are migrating the traffic or the mobile traffic of the Euskaltel customers, which is the amount of or the percentage of the mobile traffic that is being handled in your own network? Thank you.
Thank you, Fernando. In brand portfolio, I mean, PassMobile has the ability to manage quite well multiple brands. We have our structural operational costs are quite reduced, and in terms of marketing, as you know, we are not the guys that invest most in marketing. So basically, we do marketing in Yoigo, in PassMobile, less in Pepephone, and the rest we are basically doing point of sales presence. And not much more. So in terms, we are quite efficient and we don't plan for a significant reduction of our brands. Basically, as mentioned before, we probably have some room to optimize in the prepaid ethnic segments where we have three brands, Yamaya, Levara and Laika, but it will not be immediate and it will be midterm eventually, and we have not taken any decisions right now regarding that. In terms of and obviously, we are continuing to be a competitor of Orange until something changes. So we will continue with the same competitive pressure and the same brands over the next at least year, probably. No? In terms of margin, well, we have still some operational leverage. It's true there is also some headwind, eventual headwind now with inflation, energy prices, etc. But we see still some operational leverage if we continue growing, which we think we will. In terms of mobile traffic, once migrated everything, it depends a bit on the month, because there's some seasonality. You know, in the summer we have a bit a lower share, etc. But we will be between 45% and 50% of own traffic share.
Very clear. Many thanks, many.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Vivek Khanna from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone, and thanks for the presentation and for taking my questions. I have a few, if I may. I guess the first one is with regards to your restructuring cash costs. So I think for the full year, they were up at 47 million versus 34 million in the last 9 months. And I know in the report, you talk not only restructuring, but also sort of COVID-related impact. So I'm just wondering, on a full year basis, how much of the 47 million was related to the Euskaltel restructuring? So I guess that's my first question.
Vivek, hi, this is Javier. No, not very material amount of restructuring taking place at Euskaltel. It is not taken into account within those 47, but rather included into the total cost of the transaction that includes also the funding. Mm? So it's not material at all amount, not included into the 47 million for the full year. But rather on the
So you account for it on the other side. But how much?
Exactly.
How much did you? Just out of curiosity, then, regardless of where it's captured in your financials, how much did you spend in Euskaltel in restructuring costs related to the Euskaltel acquisition in full year 21?
Well, Vivek, it depends on. So the number is around, you know, give or take around 40 million. But. That number is not restructuring itself, and this is why, you know, it's not considered to be, you know, put into the restructuring pack, because it's more integration than purely restructuring, if you know what I mean, no? So there's a difference between cost of integrating that cost of pure restructuring, which, you know, you and I will understand as pure restructuring.
Okay, fair, but this 40 million clearly would be captured in the cost transaction related costs at the time, so that's what we need to be tracking. Perfect.
Yep.
So that's perfect. That's great. And sorry, just a little bit of detail out here again. Apologize for that. But you got this other adjustment in your net debt bridge, which has increased from 40 million in the 9 months to 72 million in the fourth quarter, in the full year. And you also talk about accrued interest as being part of the adjustment. Could you just maybe just remind us exactly of that 72 million, how much of that is accrued interest? Because I've done some back of the envelope math calculations, and I think I'm wrong. So maybe if you can highlight what that number would be, that'd be great, just to provide a little bit more detail on that 72 million number.
Sure. Yeah. You know, give me 1 second. I'll come back to you on that number to be precise.
Perfect.
All right. So let's move on, and then I'll come back to the number.
Okay. And then the final thing is, I mean, obviously, on your on slide 10 of the PDF or 9 of the presentation, you know, you're showing sort of pro forma EBITDA growth of 10%. Is it fair to say that if we were to strip out the impact of the IFRS 13 adjustment on your full year basis, just to keep life simple, you know, I'm calculating about 74 million in benefit on a full year basis. Does that make sense? Is it in the right ballpark? Because that's basically going to take your EBITDA growth from 10% down to 3% on a like-for-like basis. And I just wanted to get some confirmation on that.
Well, Vivek, the number is about right. Okay. The only thing that I will say is that you know, you should be also consistent in that analysis when you moved from you know, when you move from the 2021 figure to the 2022. Huh? Okay. So yes, there is clearly some headwind on that number growth. Obviously, that will convert into tailwind going forward, no? So again, I'm just saying that yeah, the number is right. If you look to things in that way, then obviously we will have a very clearly headwind coming in the next quarters.
Okay, thank you very much.
And also bear in mind that you know, there was around 25 million in 2020.
Okay.
So the delta in 2021 is not a straight. The full figure.
It's more than 3% growth, what you're saying.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Mandeep Singh from Redburn. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking the question. I have two questions, please. So first of all, can you just maybe talk a little bit about how you see the evolving change in football rights in Spain and what that might mean for you, given, you know, you now have a bigger footprint of TV customers with Euskaltel and potentially a much bigger footprint of TV customers after the combination with Orange, if that concludes, and whether you believe that the change in rights to DAZN will result in some fragmentation and what kind of opportunities you see in the market in terms of smaller packages being sold by other players, and just a little bit more detail on the football rights situation, please. And then regarding the proposed deal with Orange, I know you can't say very much because the transaction hasn't been signed yet, but I think Orange has been a little bit more forthcoming in their conversations on their call. They kind of said any combination is possible as long as it doesn't involve Telefonica. Like, you've already said it will go with DGCOM. Like, do you see this as a relatively straightforward deal, or do you think it could see the requirement for a, you know, potentially structural remedy to somebody like Digi, given how high the customer market share numbers will be of the proposed combination? Thank you.
Well, thank you. First question, football rights. We have to consider that currently in the MásMóvil group, we are not an audiovisual operator. So we are distributing content, and we are distributing it to the content to around 800,000 clients, but we are not an audiovisual operator, meaning we are not purchasing directly the content, nor we are producing our own content. We are just, let's say, an aggregator, and we are distributing it. We have a partner, Agile TV, that is an audiovisual operator. First point. Second is the change in the football rights is the following. Basically, half of the Spanish league was bought by Movistar, Telefonica, and the other half by DAZN. DAZN is an OTT platform. That means that from September or August this year onwards, our clients could also access at least part of the
Spanish Football League. And that is for us obviously an upside because clients that until now didn't choose MassMobile because they couldn't access the Spanish League to watch the football games, they have an opportunity to still use MassMobile and watch also the football games via DAZN, this part of it. So for us it's an upside. We will not buy football rights. We don't think we will change our strategy. Therefore, well, it depends on our clients, but in principle, it's an upside for us. In terms of the proposed deal, I can be also very straightforward. We will not merge with Telefonica. No, we don't foresee any merge with anybody else. But we will work, obviously, proactively on the transaction with Orange. We foresee that we could be able or in the position to sign a deal during the month of June. But it's early to give you a detailed calendar. In terms of if this will be a straightforward transaction, well, we believe that at first sight, we don't think this is a transaction that should require remedies or no important remedies because we have a very dynamic market. We have a lot of players. MassMobile is not yet is not anymore the, let's say, the most aggressive operator in the market. We have other figures emerging that are very much more price aggressive. So a high competitive situation is assured in the Spanish market with or without this transaction, and therefore we are quite optimistic.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Jacopo Beretta from Onyx Credit. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Congratulations for the results. Just one question on my side. If you can give us more info around the Portuguese plan that you have in terms of when are you going to launch the operation. You mentioned a CapEx-like strategy, if you have a number on that, given that, if I remember correctly, you have to cover 25% of the territory, and if you're planning to launch a converged offer following the acquisition of Cabonitel. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Well, maybe just a bit of history. We acquired Cabonitel with the Novo and the Oni brands together with a financial investor around 2 years ago. Then we have sold the Oni, the B2B business, around 1 year ago, and now we have taken full control of Novo, the retail business, very recently. At the end of last year, we could acquire a relevant spectrum holding in 3.5 gigahertz, 2.6 gigahertz, and 1.8 gigahertz. So it's a spectrum portfolio that is quite substantial. And right now, we are in the phase where we're detailing our strategic plan. We will announce details regarding this plan most probably during this quarter, so we are advancing quite well. As mentioned before, it will be CapEx light. As also mentioned in the past, we have different options. One option might include the partnering with infra funds to create open networks, but we are evaluating also alternatives. So we have not concluded yet, but as mentioned, we will announce something pretty soon.
Got it. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you. The next question comes from Juan Peña from GVC Gaesco. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my question. I would like to ask you about the macro conditions in this context of high inflation that we are suffering and that it seems that will continue some months. Do you see some price increases in your tariffs to mitigate the possible margin reduction? And related to that, are you suffering some problems with supply chains? in your current business? Thank you very much.
So, sorry, could you repeat the second part of your question?
The second part is if you are suffering some problems with supply chains in your business, for example, with the routers or something like that. Thank you.
Okay. Well, regarding inflation, we have some impact. We had already some impact last year, but it's reduced because in part we are hedged with our contracts, with our providers. So still it's not a very significant impact, but okay, if this continues, especially regarding 2023, we have to do some changes or renegotiations of contracts to avoid relevant impact. In terms of prices, I mean, MassMobile does not do unilateral price increases to its clients. We have never done it. However, we are in a situation that at least at FMC, in the most brands, where we are having a higher ARPU in the front book than in the back book, meaning that the new clients increase the average ARPU level. So this is a privileged situation still for us, and therefore we don't foresee any change in our policy to not do unilateral price increases. In terms of supply, it's difficult times. It's difficult times. You have to imagine that the lead times for instance, routers is over 1 year. However, MassMobile is well prepared. We have a good working business continuity plan. We have had a serious crisis around two and a half years ago when we had the ZTE blockade in Europe. We had back then all the routers we are almost exclusively bought from ZTE, and that made us work very hard on business continuity. We diversified, and we can say today that we have sufficient stock for the next year, and we don't foresee any shortage, so not any relevant stock problems. But this can change because it changes continuously, because also our providers have providers that might change policies, but in principle, we should be safe.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Joshua Nils from BNP Paribas Exane. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the questions from me. There's two from my side. The first would just be maybe if you are able to give a bit more colour on what looked to have been quite long-running discussions between not just Orange but also Vodafone and other parties. So when it came to making the decision on the deal which has been proposed, was it just valuation that was the key determinant, or were there any other factors that play in your thinking on whether to accept the Orange approach? It'd be great to just hear a bit more about your thoughts there, and particularly understand where Vodafone were coming from. And then secondly, in terms of the synergies going forward and the opportunity to migrate more traffic to the Orange network, which I see will be part of the synergy breakdown, what contracts do you have in place today with Telefonica or others regarding your fixed line business, and how quickly would you be able to migrate traffic in future should this deal be approved? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joshua. I beg your pardon, but I cannot comment on rumors of the past. No, what I can say is that we are working actively on the transaction with Orange, because we are complementary in a lot of senses. No, Orange has higher presence in the premium segments, in the B2B segment, in the wholesale business. We are stronger in the ethnic segment, so the foreigner segment, in the retail segment in general. So we are complementary. We have limited overlap infrastructure. That's also very important, because we have a modest own mobile network, and Orange is our principal partner in roaming. And in fiber, we have basically jointly developed in a co-investment scheme big part of the fiber network. That means also that, and that's already to your second question, that there is little migration need because we are basically jointly using already a 1+ something network in both in mobile and in fixed. That's one of the big advantages that we have a joint infrastructure network in big parts, and that means that there's limited need to migrate. And that means time to synergy is quite quick, and that helps us to be more efficient, more productive, and having the capability to invest more in future infrastructure developments, both especially in 5G as well as in fiber.
And sorry, just to clarify the second question, I think what I wanted to get to is in areas where you are going to build new fiber going forwards, either standalone as Masterville or as part of an Orange combination, once you've built the fiber, can you migrate customers directly onto it immediately? Or is there a notification period where you have to tell Telefonica that we want to migrate these subscribers and then it's 6-12 months down the line that you can actually do it? Thanks.
Well, I could only talk for MásMóvil, but I cannot reveal confidential details of our contracts with other parties. I cannot talk for Orange because I don't know their contracts. It's difficult to answer, but operationally, not legally speaking, operationally, fiber migrations are quite easy because not in all cases we have to change the CP, so the router, and in some cases we don't have to change the last drop. We have done it before. It's something that we know how to do it, and therefore we don't see operational risk in doing that. Regarding the legal contractual terms, I cannot answer at this point in time.
Understood. Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Philippe Blanquet from ODDO BHF. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everybody, and thank you for the presentation and congratulations on your full year results. Yes, there are two questions from my side, please. With regard to your guidance, your CapEx, could you give us soft guidance for this year and maybe for the next? What do you expect for regular growth CapEx split? And secondly, which EBITDA margin for 2022 is realistic for this year? Do you expect, again, a strong margin due to the synergies? Or what is your expectation? Is there further potential to increase the margin towards the 40%? Thank you really much.
Thank you for your question. I mean, I ask you for comprehension that giving guidance is not the ideal moment because we are in the middle of in the final negotiation of a deal. That's why before signing such a deal, I would like to avoid to give guidance to the market. I mean, Javier, maybe you explain the CapEx logic of Q4 to help a bit, but it can be only a high-level description.
Absolutely. Thank you, Manny. Philippe, I think Manny has been very clear that this is by no means have to be understood as guidance. But if you look into, for instance, so let's do two type of approach to this. One will be quick and dirty. If you look into the fourth quarter CapEx, obviously excluding the one-off projects, and you take into account also what Manny mentioned about the retrofitting effort made in the fourth quarter, specifically in the fourth quarter, you might come to a figure around 140, give or take, quarterly CapEx, and analyzing that will give you a figure around, again, the 550. The only reason we are mentioning that number is because it's a number put in the context of what we mentioned at the time of the refinancing. If you take into account the two different CapEx structure of both Euskaltel and MásMóvil, with Euskaltel obviously being a little bit more CapEx intensive in the maintenance of the network while it's still a cable network, and you see the performance of commercial and infrastructure CapEx over the last quarter, you see some trends that, considering similar growth going forward. And again, this is an element that obviously will be up to you to decide what is the growth profile of the company going forward. A figure in the range of 550 could also make sense. No, this is what was mentioned before. It was not guidance. It was just an indication of relative value where things could be moving on. And I hope that helps, because this is as much as we can say on that front.
Yes, thank you. I understand. Great.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you, if you have any comments or questions, please press 01 on your telephone keypad to enter a queue. The next question comes from Bobby Mahanti from Amelist. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Y repito, enhorabuena, señores, Manny y Javier. Ha sido un buen encuentro y felicidades por los números. I have a couple of questions, if I may. The first is a real question, and the second is just something I would like to hear your thoughts on. So my question is, after completing this integration with Euskaltel, that also includes R, do you see in the future any possible divestments from the erstwhile Euskaltel group? We understand Euskaltel and R have also had enterprise small, medium company facing businesses. Would you be continuing to hold on to that, or do you foresee letting them go?
Thank you, Bobby, and congrats. Your Spanish is better than mine. regarding Euskaltel, very clear. No, we don't plan any divestments. Yes, there is a relevant B2B business in Euskaltel with more than 120 million of revenues. But for us, this is a growth opportunity, meaning extending the best practices from the north of Spain to the rest of Spain. And therefore, for us, we see it as an opportunity and not as a potential divestment.
Thank you. Now, I just want both of you gentlemen to just talk out aloud, because the next is not a question. It's something we have been very interested to hear about. You've completed more than 5 years in the hands of Providence, and of course now joined by the other guys from private equity. Have you had any chances of benchmarking your own numbers, ratios, and, you know, growth, etc.? It has been growth, thankfully, with the other telecom companies also held by Providence and the other private equity players. For example, I'm very curious to understand if in the last 2 or 3 years, especially during these times, have you benchmarked Mass Mobile Group with someone else like Cable Deutschland or any other telco player out of Spain?
Well, Bob, in which sense benchmarked? I mean, what we are doing...
Well, I'll explain, yeah. Manny. And I'm speaking out very simplistically, but our intention is to understand, how you're going to operate going forward. Benchmarking would be, for example, allowing for the differences of markets, the numbers, and also the operating cash flows. The flows generated by another telecom company within the portfolio compared to your own cash flows that you generate in Mass Mobile. If that is clearer.
Yes. Bobby, the thing is, we are growing our cash flows so quickly that it's difficult to compare, because we have a high operating leverage, no, and a high amount of infrastructure already available, no, in basically in fiber. We have a very high share of own fiber, around close to 20 million homes or 19 point something million homes. We have long-term roaming agreements that make that avoid also significant capex in case of Mass Mobile. So we have a very particular player. Capex light strategy was quite successful until now, and it's difficult to compare with any other players, probably in Europe and especially in the portfolio of one of our shareholders. Having said that, so we are not so much focused on concrete financial benchmarking. What we are doing is best practice transfer with portfolio companies of our shareholders, but also other players that are not competitors, to understand and learn from the rest. Yes, here we are active. We are not so much focused on financial comparison because, I mean, we are case difficult to compare.
Understood, and I thank you, Manny. But I'll repeat, from our side as analysts, we also, applaud you guys at MassMobile for continuing with your analyst meets and your disclosures, even though in the recent few months, few quarters, you guys have crossed over to the other side. And allow me to conclude by saying that all of you guys are young, and we wish you a very happy, coming quarters, but also professionally, because as you pointed out, Manny, if in June you do communicate to us the closure of this deal going on with Orange, then between the two of you, Christel from France Telecom Orange and you, would become two of the youngest bosses of genuine telecom companies here in the European Union, and we would like to continue meeting with you going forward for the coming calls.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. You know, I'm starting to feel a bit old because I started MassMobile with 30 years and now it's 60 years later. But yes, I'm looking also forward to collaborate and to partner with Christel, hopefully.
Wonderful. Y otra vez, felicidades al equipo entero.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you. The next question comes from Jean-Yves Guibert from BluePay Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Good morning to all of you. Three questions, if I may. The first one, on your fixed network, can you provide us, if I refer to slide 12, just the 7.7 million fixed line, are they currently, as of Q4, are they currently those under Bitstream access with Telefónica, or are there others? And within the 19.4, how many of these lines are under IRU's agreements with operators other than Orange? So mainly I would say Vodafone, if you can provide that details. Second question, just to bridge between your last two quarters annualized EBITDA, which is, I think, at 1184, to your structuring EBITDA, so it's a difference of 143 million. If you can bridge that to us, provide us the details to your structuring EBITDA, please. Actually, two other quick questions. Following up to Vivek, a question on the IFRS 3. I think you incurred 24, 25 million in Q4 20 as positive impact on your reported EBITDA. Wasn't it headwinds actually as far as Q4 21 was concerned in terms of growth? Or was it around 20 million this impact and this impact going down later in 2022?
Could you repeat the last point with the Q4 EBITDA that, to make sure that we understood correctly your question?
Yeah, the Q4 20 IFRS 3 impact was, I added at 24 million, you indicated 25 million earlier on the call, but wasn't it a headwind impact as far as Q4 21 is concerned, i.e. Isn't it the Q4 21 IFRS 3 impact, wasn't it lower than this than last year 24 million impact, if you can confirm that, and was it around 15 or 20 million? And can you remind me with respect to the Portuguese spectrum, if you can remind me whether there is aside the obligation to network rollout, whether what was the price consideration and what is the scheduled payment pattern on this one? Thank you.
Okay, I start with the fiber. So yes, the indirect network is mainly with Telefonica, but not only. We have also some, let's say, minor agreements, for instance, with Adamo and with Lindia in Spain. But most of it is Telefonica, and then the rest in the own and usage rights. also most of it is the joint network with Orange that we have. And then additionally, we have agreements with Vodafone around 1 million. And I would just estimate that we have around 1 million in addition beside Vodafone and Telefonica included. So around 2 million alternative players.
And the UCLES is when you say 2 million, is that pro forma the UCLES project, or it will bring it to 3 million?
No, the UCLES is included, the UCLES is included in the indirect already. So Telefonica is basically, I would say, 90% of everything besides the project that we did with Macquarie, which is UCLES and Manzanilla, and in total around 2 million homes.
Okay, great.
The next one was regarding the structuring EBITDA and the waterfall from reported EBITDA, no?
Correct.
Or from pro forma.
Yeah. From the last two quarters annualized the pro forma EBITDA.
Yanif, the structuring EBITDA calculated or used in the calculation of the leverage, it's basically the last two quarters annualized. Including all the synergies expected to be achieved, plus obviously the ones that have been already achieved, which is not a significant part, but that's included into the annualization of the previous EBITDA, and then a figure which is the adjustments made on the integration of Euskaltel within the group that is basically accounting mainly accounting items, no, and running rates of adjustments that need to be done on the integration from an accounting perspective of Euskaltel. Mm? So those are the two major elements of the structuring EBITDA. Put it this way, the formula is the same that has been applied in the previous quarters. No?
And does it include the negative 13 million for the NetCo impact?
It includes the yes, it does. It does include the NetCo impact, the negative NetCo impact. Yes.
And out of the 110 million targeted synergies you were expecting by 2022, how much of that has been realized at the end of 21, and therefore how much of these remain to be extracted in 2022?
Okay, I think already on an annualized basis, I think we are talking about, on a quarterly basis, we're talking probably about 15 million.
Been realized?
Yes.
So on the run rate, 60 million?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. And then let me see, Yanis, if I understood first the question on IFRS 3 and the impact on the profitability of the company or the EBITDA and compared with last year. So if I understood you well, and if I don't, please stop me. Eh? But on the fourth quarter last year, obviously there was some impact, and that impact is lower in the fourth quarter of this year. In fact, it's a declining glide path, which will obviously imply a significant lower figure for the full 22 than 21. Hmm? So you're right to see a declining impact.
Yeah, it does imply that your organic growth in Q4 21 EBITDA wise is in fact higher than 10% if we strip out the IFRS 3.
Correct. If you do it, from quarter to quarter, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
On that front, yes, because the impact was. This is what I meant about the headwind becoming tailwind. Obviously. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Good point. Yes. Absolutely.
And with respect to the Portuguese spectrum?
Yes, with the Portuguese spectrum, we have acquired spectrum in three frequencies, 1.8, 2.6, and 3.5 gigahertz. So both, if you wish, 4G and 5G spectrum. The total amount, the upfront payment is 70 million, of which half of it has been paid. And I think the remaining 35 million, more or less, will be paid in the next 5 years. In addition, there are some spectrum fees, but they are quite reduced in comparison to other countries. I think in total, the spectrum fee, we would have to confirm, please, Javier, the exact amounts. But right now, my estimation is that it's between 1 and 1.5 million euros yearly.
Okay. And the 35 million, which has already been paid, was it being paid in 2021 or is in Q1 22?
No, in last quarter, so in December 2021.
Okay, and within your CapEx, where is being accounted for?
No, it's not consolidated yet, Novo, in the accounts of 2021.
Okay, so it does not appear in your cash flow in your cash flow 21.
No. Yes, it's not included. We have just very recently took the control of the asset.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you as well.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tony Lebon from Sycamore. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my question. It's on the NetCo transaction. I'd like to understand, to have a, let's say, more context on what's going on, because originally speaking, the NetCo transaction was supposed to close at the end of last year, and then it was postponed to Q1. That's what I was told, and now it's Q2. So could you please give more context about this to, let's say, to see if we can clearly stick to Q2. Thank you.
Yeah. You have to be flexible with us a bit in this sense, because obviously with the Euskaltel acquisition, we had to reorganize all our wholesale relationships with the remaining operators, and that took some time. First point. Second point, we have been reducing the scope of the NetCo that was originally planned to have a size of 2.3 million homes to 1.1 million homes, because we contributed as MásMóvil significant assets already in the north of Spain to our joint project. So the need for additional volume was not there anymore. So we have adjusted, and basically, as mentioned, we will close or sign and announce the NetCo during this quarter. We expect to have a size of 1.1 million homes included in the NetCo, meaning homes that have formerly been cable or HFC, and we have updated to fiber. We will generate net proceeds from MásMóvil at least of 500 million euros, probably a bit more. The participation of MásMóvil will be close to 50%, and we will have additional capex avoidance of around 130 million euros. So all this is in line with what we expect. We are looking for optimal terms, and we are getting there, so we are quite optimistic that during this quarter, and probably even before the end of this quarter, we will announce a successful deal.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. There are no further questions in today's call. I give back the floor to the company for the conclusion.
Sure. Okay, thank you very much, operator. So this is Javier again. Before Manny closes the conference call, I promise to come back to Vivek. So we, as you know, we like to fulfill our promises. So here you are, Vivek. The answer to the accrued interest is 45 million. So now that we don't own anything to you, I pass the floor to Manny.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be with you and to answer your questions. We are quite happy with the past performance, but we are already looking forward to our future performance. We will work hard that our growth story continues and that we can successfully sign the announced deal. Thank you very much. Have a great day. Bye-bye.